TV drama has entered its platinum age. Novels are being written by more diverse and talented authors than ever before. Even games are getting decent stories now. But in the world of podcasts, dramas are being out-earned and out-listened by their non-fiction counterparts. So here's a big question. Why? And here's the easy answer. In the 1960s and 1970s, television killed the radio drama star. Families turned their sofas and their attention towards the captivating new screens in their living rooms. And radio networks retreated. They focused on news, talk shows, and music. So maybe today, television continues to draw attention away from podcast dramas. Now, it's true that podcasts are different from radio. They're easier to distribute, cheaper to produce, more convenient to consume, and more diverse in form. But as freely accessible audio content, they're more similar to radio than not. And while a few radio dramas remain on the loose, with BBC Radio 4's The Archers attracting over 4 million listeners in every episode, and The Afternoon Play with 1 million, the field has never really recovered. And yet, in the last year, we've heard predictions from the New York Times of an audio storytelling renaissance emerging from studios like Gimlet, Panoply, Earwolf, 2UP Productions, and Night Vale Presents, in the form of dramas with huge budgets like Homecoming, Fruit, Limetown, and Within the Wires. So, could it be true? Could we be witnessing the rebirth of audio dramas as mass entertainment? Or maybe this is just wishful thinking from a genre riding on the coattails of true crime podcasts and talk shows. So let's take a look at the iTunes podcast charts. What don't you see? Dramas. On the 22nd of June this year, the sole podcast drama in the top 100 iTunes charts was Welcome to Night Vale at number 98. Back in 2015, Night Vale frequently placed in the top 20, but these days it floats between 70 and 100. And when I looked a few weeks later, Night Vale was joined by Homecoming at number 31 and Rabbits at number 47. So this was a slightly better performance for dramas, but they still only represented 3% of the top 100. In comparison, out of the top 10 US primetime TV shows last year, 6 were scripted dramas. Things used to be different. In September 2015, Limetown was number 1 for a whole week, and Panoply's The Message equaled the achievement in November 2015. A few months later, Alice Isn't Dead by Night Vale Presents was number 1 for 4 days, but since then, the only drama that hit number 1 was Rabbits, and that was only for a single day in March this year. It's difficult to fully understand how podcast dramas are performing, given that barely anyone shares real download numbers. Perhaps they're doing a roaring business that isn't reflected in the charts. Perhaps there are plenty of dramas lurking unseen just below the top 100. But there's no denying that podcast dramas are only getting less popular relative to other genres. In November last year, Homecoming, with formidable production values, heavyweight promotion across Gimlet's network, and an all-star cast of Catherine Keener, David Schwimmer, and Oscar Isaac, that show, it still couldn't get above number 3 on iTunes. And debuting only a couple of weeks later, Panoply's Life After only reached 15, and this was a follow-up to The Message, which hit number 1, if you remember. It's possible the US election is to blame, but the charts around that time show podcast audiences opting for the classics, true crime, documentaries, and talk shows, not just politics. Or maybe these two big shows cannibalize each other's audiences, launching so close together. Well, I don't buy that argument. No one thinks Malcolm Gladwell's revisionist history is hindered by Invisibilia or TED Radio Hour. Quite the opposite. Listen to one good non-fiction podcast, and you're more likely to seek out another. There's no reason why people shouldn't be capable of following two podcast dramas each week, given they do plenty more for TV and non-fiction podcasts. The truth is that things are slipping for dramas. So I know what you're thinking. What about Audible? Well, first, I've got to give some full disclosure. Audible paid my company, Six to Start, to produce The Way of All Flesh, which is an audio drama written by Naomi Aldman and based on our app, Zombies Run. And Audible has also advertised on Zombies Run. So with that out of the way, the big question is, how much does Audible make? And we don't really know, because as befits an Amazon company, none of its graphs have y-axes, but we do know that they had 2 billion hours of audio downloaded last year, up from 1 billion in 2014. So they probably got millions of active subscribers, and they're paying a lot of money. Then there's a small matter of them selling 95% of all 50 million audiobooks in 2016. Not all of Audible's content is just audiobooks. They also have channels. And so here's what they say about channels. They say Audible channels are podcasts that are commercial-free and can be streamed or downloaded to listen without an internet connection. If audiobooks are like movies, say Audible, then Audible channels are like TV shows. They're shorter in length and have various episodes. The different channels include comedy, history, drama, mysteries, documentary style, storytelling, and much more. We have something for everyone. So basically, they're just podcasts. And yes, there are drama channels, including the one for The Way of All Flesh, but they make up a small proportion of Audible's overall library, and presumably income. Now look, I know it seems foolish to disqualify audiobooks from a discussion on podcast dramas, given how popular and profitable they are, and given how far they've been delivered by mobile apps. And you know, they're both fiction. But they aren't the same. You can't seriously compare the low-cost, low-risk adaptation of already existing books into audiobooks with the high-cost, high-risk creation of original audio or podcast dramas. They're completely different kinds of business, and the content is totally different. Podcast dramas are written for audio. Audiobooks are not. So, despite Audible's enormous success of audiobooks, they've yet to demonstrate they've cracked the nut of producing massively popular audio dramas. Now, maybe they have secret data that contradicts this, in which case, I'd be delighted to eat crow, but until then, the jury's out. So, what's the problem with podcast dramas? Could it be that they cost more to make? Well, they can be much more expensive to produce than non-fiction podcasts. Writing the scripts often takes far longer, and they usually spend more on actors and sound engineering. Some shows, like This American Life, do burn a lot of money on research and travel, but they usually have massive audiences to match. Well, what about making money? So it might be harder to target ads against podcast dramas compared to, say, tech or health podcasts, where you can imagine Apple or Fitbit might want to go and sponsor those. But then again, fiction provides a perfect opportunity for safe brand sponsorships. So for instance, if you are Coca-Cola, you might be reluctant to advertise on a show like Crime Town or S-Town. But you needn't worry when it comes to scripted dramas like The Message and Life After, which, of course, in those cases, you can just read the script, and they're both sponsored by GE. Fiction also lends itself better to merchandising. Just look at Disney. If you can get your audience invested in your story and characters and your drama, they'll want to literally wear their passion on their chests. And believe me, we've sold a lot of Zombies Run t-shirts. Even better, fiction podcasts don't age as quickly as topical news shows or talk shows, so they'll generate money for longer. Now, if there is a big money problem, it lies in the pretty understandable reluctance of investors to take a risk on podcast dramas. A big podcast drama, it could cost $50,000, $100,000, $200,000 to make. Now, you need big money for that. And while there are talented writers out there, there aren't any Alex Blumbergs of Gimlet Media with 18 years of experience, no surefire bets like Roman Mars, no showrunners or studio heads who've turned out a wide stable of dramas repeatedly for multiple seasons. Night Vale Presents, I think, are the only team getting even close. So that's a bad news, but the good news is that this is a problem Time can solve. I've listened to more than 1,000 hours of podcasts in the last 3 years, so that's like 2.5 hours per day. And I spend almost all of that time walking, running, cleaning, or cooking, or just doing anything else. Unlike TV or games, audio is ideal for passive consumption. And the flip side of passive consumption is that our attention can often wander from what we're listening to. So this hasn't been a big problem for the talk shows and conversational podcasts I listen to, since I can drift off for a while and still catch the meaning. But I've struggled with some podcast dramas that have required continuous focus. I'm not saying that everyone's like me or that audiences are incapable of focusing their attention on audio. There are plenty of tales of people sitting in the driveway listening to the end of an intense S-Town episode. But I am saying that when we choose to focus our attention on media or entertainment, we prefer to spend that time on film and TV and games rather than sitting in front of the wireless not doing anything else. So, podcast dramas have accordingly shortened their episodes to prevent listener fatigue. And so these days, most podcast dramas come in well under 30 minutes. Likewise, back in 2012, when we designed Zombies Run, we made sure that our audio story clips would be no longer than 5 minutes, and they'd always be broken up by a full music track in between, because we know that if you had 10 or 20 minutes of just intense zombie story, you'd just get tired. Now, that might sound like a recipe for a fragmented narrative, but we've done 200 episodes and we have 250,000 monthly users, so I think it's working pretty well. So we can also learn from the innovations in radio drama that followed the devastating exodus of radio audiences in the 1970s from radio dramas. Basically, back in the 1970s, there was one show that really was very interesting, really celebrated on Radio 4. And it actually wasn't produced by the Radio 4's drama department, but actually by Light Entertainment. So that's kind of like comedy, I suppose. And that show was The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which of course was originally a radio show, it wasn't a book first. And the production made use of the BBC's Radiophonic Workshop, and they used extensive post-production to create what they call a richly textured comic book style of production. And so this, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, it was incredibly successful with a younger audience. And it helped to change commonly held views of Radio 4 and attract younger listeners. And this combination of comedy and science fiction produced a drama serial which was both lowbrow and highbrow. And I have to recommend that sort of passage came from Professor Hugh Chignall, who's director of the Center of Media History at Bournemouth University, and I'll put a link in. So I'll concede that geniuses like Douglas Adams, who wrote The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, these people aren't 10 to a penny, but we can still break new ground. There's an intimacy that audio drama offers, that voice in your ear, that you just don't get with TV or games. And there's an exuberance to the tonal shifts and layering of music and sound effects. And there's potentially an accessibility, thanks to the unique ability for audio to be passively consumed wherever you are, whatever you're doing. This accessibility is something that other media can't equal. So I don't think, actually, that the problem of attention is the biggest problem for radio now that you can listen to podcasts wherever you are. I don't know whether you've noticed, but podcasts are exerting a strong gravitational pull on comedians and journalists and commentators and thought leaders and documentarians. There's money, there's creative freedom, and there's a chance to establish a personal relationship with your audience. In fact, I'd argue that our best and most innovative documentarians are working audio right now on shows like This American Life and Serial and so on, drawn by the opportunity to tell stories that aren't financially viable or creatively suited to film or TV or print. even subjects that, you know, on the face of it, make absolutely no sense being delivered via audio, such as design and architecture, are made to work beautifully by passionate and talented journalists on shows like 99% Invisible. But it's actually quite hard to see why fiction writers would be drawn to podcasts. Because, you know, if you want to reach millions of people and make millions of dollars, you'd become a screenwriter. And if you were excited by technology, you'd get into games. And if you wanted total control, of course, you'd write a book. But let's say you ignore the doubters and you just ignore your worried parents. So if you want to write for podcast dramas, where do you send your script? You know, the process for becoming a screenwriter or novelist, it's not easy, obviously, but it's well understood. The process for becoming a podcast drama writer, however, is practically non-existent. You know, Audible has just announced this new $5 million fund for emerging playwrights, and this is a pretty inspired idea, since the golden age of the 1950s and 1960s of radio dramas saw playwrights like Harold Pinter and Samuel Beckett write and adapt works for radio. But this $5 million fund, it was just announced and we don't really know much about it. As far as I can tell, they just meant to email them and hope. Well, my hope is that there'll be more visible opportunities that become available for talented writers, not just in the form of cash from the sky from Audible for one or two person plays, but as prizes, commissions, grants, and development deals for a wide variety of budgets. There are some stories that can be told on a shoestring, if only you've got the right team together, and of course, other stories do need more money. So, in the past, playwrights in the 70s, it seems like they're discouraged from writing for radio due to bad pay. In fact, they only got one quarter of the money of that paid for TV drama, so it's not surprising at all that screenwriters would go to, well, screens rather than radios. Now, today, no one's expecting to become rich. We know that podcast dramas are not going to make as much money as TV shows or movies, but it would be nice to pay the bills. And if we broaden the road for aspiring audio storytellers, we will all benefit. There's no good way to say this, so I'll just get it over with. I think too many shows are skipping straight to the prestige podcast drama genre without passing through normal drama or even soap opera first. Don't get me wrong, I love prestige drama and I'm a sucker for high concept, plot heavy fiction, and I love sci-fi, but I still found it hard to love shows like Homecoming. Frankly, I thought it was a bit boring and overwritten, and many of my friends who watch a lot of prestige TV felt the same. I listened to the whole season, but they stopped at the first episode. And the problem isn't just the editing and the time-jumping tricks they use in that show. It's their characters, who are more like ciphers to be solved than real people. And I think this is a problem for a lot of recent podcast dramas. So, some podcasts get around this problem by turning into docu-fiction podcasts. So these are a bit like Serial, but fictional. And so, you could count Limetown and The Message and Rabbits in this genre. And, you know, they manage to assume the form of podcasts that we already know and enjoy, but that form can equally become a constraint. I had to laugh when one character was diligently recording and narrating her door being battered down by a psychopath, her podcast show. I mean, well done, lady, for continue to do your job, but shouldn't you be running away rather than recording? You know, this kind of brought back fond memories of Pamela, which is an epistolary novel by Sam Richardson, one of the first novels, actually. And in that book, the protagonist, she would furiously scribble letters down to her parents as her door was being battered down. I mean, why? And even if you don't go that far, there's still far too much throat clearing in the form of, is this recording or, hey, is this on, in these docufiction podcasts. And, you know, I don't have a problem in general docu-fiction. Some of my best friends are docu-fiction, like This Is Spinal Tap, or more recently, The Office and Parks and Recreation. But, you know, it's a delicate device, unsuited to most stories, and thankfully, the creators of The Message dispense with the format in their follow-up, Life After, which even included a voiceover, kind of Blade Runner style. So it's obviously not, you know, not actually just recordings of podcasts. It's a real podcast drama. Now, while I don't personally enjoy soap operas, I'm kind of baffled that no one's actually tried them as a podcast drama. You know, not every podcast drama needs to be magic realism or science fiction. Just look at BBC Radio 4's The Archers. This is the most popular English language audio drama in the world, and that's just a soap opera, you know, on a farm. There are TV shows that would kill for its numbers, 4 million people every week. Now, of course, we shouldn't only write soap opera podcasts, but we should learn from their strong characterization and compelling dialogue. So often, in a lot of these podcast dramas I listen to now, it's just the best stuff is in monologues, and that seems like a shame. It should be more people talking to each other rather than at each other. And you know, we can take these things, we can take strong characterization and compelling dialogue and merge those things with the other things we're excited by, whether that's docufiction or high concepts fantasy or conspiracy or sci-fi. I think Night Vale does this pretty well, and I think The Zombies Run also does it pretty well. You know, I'd love to make Mad Men as well, but we aren't quite there yet. You might be wondering, do I even like audio drama? I mean, I've spent all this time going on about how it's not good and how TV is more popular and how games are way more fun. So I'll confess, dramas are not a big part of my podcast diet. In fact, I'll really confess, I barely listened to any podcast dramas at all before I started writing this. But since then, I've listened to a shitload. And let me tell you, I enjoyed it. Now, I said that Homecoming was hard to get into, and I think it is, but the sound design and the acting is impeccable. And yes, Limetown is constrained by its format, but it has some beautifully written and beautifully performed monologues. And I found myself propelled through these dramas far faster than I expected. They were just even more bingeable than Netflix shows, because even going to the toilet couldn't stop me. Come on, we all do it. So, I'm optimistic about the future of podcast dramas, but I'm pragmatic about the challenges they face. There's no single solution, because there's no single problem. Podcast dramas need more variety, and they need more writers, and they need more investment. Let's make docufiction, sure, but let's also try soap operas and action thrillers and comedies and musicals. Actually, someone is making a musical. Let's pressure Audible and the BBC and NPR to invest in new talent. Let's make wikis and videos and conferences explain how to make dramas and swap our good ideas. Let's support the people who are creating good work right now, like Night Vale Presents, Panoply, Gimlet, and 2UP Productions. So let's write, perform, edit, produce, listen, and share, and enjoy. So I'd like to thank four people for their contributions and thoughts on this topic. There's Matt Mateska, Alex McMillan, Ryan Dilly, and Laura Hall, who gave me a lot of inspiration and some really good pointers about how to think about podcast dramas. This is actually based on an essay that I just published today on Medium called, of course, The Problem with Podcast Dramas. There'll be a link in the show notes. And yeah, if you enjoy this, follow me on Twitter at Adrian Hon, or email me at adrian.hon@gmail.com. Hopefully you found this enjoyable. Also, you know, if you listen to Crime Town, that's me you're hearing right at the top of episode 1. So, little Easter egg there.